Sit down, man.
Glenn Beck.
Sit down, man.
Rand Paul.
Sit down, man.
Netanyahu.
Sit down, man.
Sarah Palin.
Sit down, man.
Newt Gingrich.
Sit down, man.
Toby Keith.
Sit down, man.
Phyllis Schlafly.
Sit down, man.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Faz Shakir, a vice president at American Progress, and he serves as editor-in-chief of thinkprogress.org and the Progress Report. He previously worked as a research associate for the Democratic National Committee and as a legislative aide to Senator Bob Graham on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee and as a communication aide in the White House Office of National Drug Policy. And he's the co-author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform. Welcome to Background Briefing, Faz Shakir.
Thank you for having me.
And what's going on in Oklahoma now? This is, it's a bizarre situation that there's this sort of jihad going on in the United States against the imposition of Sharia law when there's absolutely zero evidence that Sharia law is in any way emerging as even a possibility in our country, in our courts, and in our culture. Yet, nevertheless, by I think a 70% majority, the citizens of Oklahoma approved State Question 755 in 2010. Where does it stand now with the Federal Appeals Court ruling?
Well, what just happened is that there was the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals who ruled that that Sharia ban is unconstitutional. And the reason it's unconstitutional is, of course, that it's a violation of the First Amendment on the grounds that it is establishing one religion over another. And it is preventing the free exercise of Muslims. And I think the big fault of the creators of this particular Oklahoma Sharia amendment was that they actually used the words Sharia and made clear that their intentions were to bash Muslims who practice their faith. For people who aren't aware of what Sharia is, it's largely a kind of code and a type of practice that governs the way in which Muslims live their lives, everything from dress to what they eat and how they choose to conduct their marriage ceremonies. It's largely just a bunch of religious practices. And in what Oklahoma was trying to do was suggest that any time that Sharia is considered in a U.S. court, it would be criminalized. The problem there, as you mentioned, is, and as the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled, that they could find no evidence that Sharia has ever been considered in the courts in Oklahoma or would be considered in the courts, because there is a provision in the Constitution, particularly namely the Supremacy Clause, which says that the supreme law of the land is the Constitution and supersedes all other laws. And you don't need any other language other than that. And so this whole exercise against Sharia is really just kind of a campaign to make people fearful and hateful towards Muslims.
So the Federal Appeals Court in Denver upheld the U.S. District Court's overturning of this amendment to the Oklahoma Constitution, voted in on question 755 by a 70% majority of citizens of Oklahoma, or voters of Oklahoma, I should say. What I find extraordinary in the United States and in our politics at the moment, Faz Shakir, is the casual racist, anti-Muslim bigotry that goes unchallenged. I mean, this law itself is ludicrous and is rooted in bigotry. During the Republican debates, Herman Cain, one of the candidates, made racist anti-Muslim remarks and said he wouldn't have a Muslim in his cabinet. This goes unchallenged. So why is it that it goes unchallenged, and who should be challenging this?
It's very popular in Republican ranks to bash Muslims, and it works out quite well for them. Their base of the Republican Party seems to appreciate this kind of hate mongering, and there's a lot of reasons for why that might be. I think one of which is that they've pitted this as kind of a war of civilizations, that somehow Muslim values are incompatible with Western values, and I think it's obviously completely false. And there are many wonderful Muslim Americans living in the United States and abiding by U.S. laws and totally assimilating into America and bringing their wonderful customs and foods and all and trust to share with us and as we share with them. And that's the way humanity, of course, should operate. But what the Republicans are doing is suggesting that Muslim values are a threat and are incompatible. And I think one of the worst examples of this is Newt Gingrich, who has is the only candidate who has suggested that he would like to propose a federal anti-Sharia law, and not just a state law, but a federal law. And, you know, there's a possibility, of course, that he could win South Carolina and carry the GOP nomination. Mitt Romney, the leading contender of the Republican side, has said explicitly in a Republican debate that there is no concern that Sharia law will be practiced in American courts. So at least he's been honest about that. I think as you see this play out, the reason that many Republicans like to talk about their fear of Muslims, and it's manifested in a number of different ways. One is, of course, let's bomb Iran because there are a lot of crazy Muslims in charge in their government, or let's keep Gitmo open and continue to detain people indefinitely in Guantanamo Bay, and that, you know, partly that's again a reason to make people fearful of Islam, and it seems to be the orchestrating foreign policy theory that as long as you can say something about how fearful Muslims are, then you can sound credible, and the media, quite frankly, hasn't done a great job of trying to push back on some of the greatest misconceptions about Islam, mostly because I think they don't quite understand it. Many people, according to a recent Brookings poll, only 3 in 10 Americans have any casual interaction with Muslims over the past year. So this is kind of a religion and a peoples who aren't familiar to America, and for that reason, we have a knowledge gap, I think, on the issue.
Well, if you were to make a bigoted anti-African-American or anti-Latino remark, you'd be pulled over by the press and by, I think, even by your own political party, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen that happen a number of times where you have people apologizing for sounding racist with respect to African-Americans or even Latinos, even though there's probably a little more leeway to sound racial in the Latino context as long as you're talking about border security or something along those lines. But you're right that, like, if you can get away with saying the most egregious things about Muslims, brown-skinned people, because there just isn't as much of a strong political appetite to defend it, unfortunately. And we saw this during the Ground Zero Mosque, the quote-unquote Ground Zero Mosque controversy, when President Obama initially tried to defend the right of Muslims to construct that house of worship. And many Democrats weren't even actually willing to stake the same position as President Obama. And in fact, the loudest voices were Republicans who were saying that they were constructing a victory mosque, and this is a victory for all terrorists, and that all of the Muslims who would go to this mosque are clearly terrorist-sympathizing Muslims. There's, you know, just very terrible kinds of insinuations.
Well, that was Fox News for several months, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Fox News has been the leader, and of course, this anti-Muslim hate plays very well on what I call hate radio. So the Rush Limbaughs and the Michael Savages and Sean Hannity's, you know, those guys, and then Andrew McCarthy at the National Review, the Weekly Standard, you know, the World Net Daily, all the kind of places that tend to get a lot of conservative traffic. Andrew Breitbart's various sites on right-wing sites. So all of those traffic in the worst kinds of anti-Muslim hate, and many of them stem from the same common people. There's an Islamophobia network on the right. Some of those individuals include Robert Spencer, who leads a blog called Jihad Watch, Frank Gaffney, who's the head of the Center for Security Policy, and that's always sounding alarms about Muslim Brotherhood infiltration of the United States. These kind of people are the ones who are often quoted, and they kind of serve as an echo chamber unto themselves.
So given that we're condoning bigotry as a culture, both in the media and in our politics, particularly on the Republican side, Has anybody pointed out, though, let's not go to the moral aspects of it. Let's just deal with practical national security issues. If we are in a so-called war on terror, the only people that can dissuade radical Islamists from becoming radicals are moderate Islamists. So in an intelligent and reasonable world, in order to fight terrorism, as it's called, wouldn't it mean that you really have to nurture moderate Islam, which is what American Muslims are? They're living in a pluralistic society. They're living examples of Islam being compatible with democracy and pluralism. Who's nurturing that logical buttress to this exaggerated war on terror?
Right. Well, that's one of the problems, is that you don't see it very often articulated by political leaders. I think President Obama does understand it. I think he's shared that kind of philosophy at times and believes it, but I don't think that there are a ton of people who are standing in line behind them willing to amplify that kind of argument in the political context, because most of what politicians have learned is that any time you try to defend Muslims, then you just basically get unfairly smeared and attacked for being too sympathetic towards terrorists. But your general argument is, of course, correct, and it is one that the administration has argued, which is that your best allies in fighting radical extremists of the Muslim faith are moderate Muslims themselves. According to a Muslim Public Affairs Council study, they said that of all the al-Qaeda plots that have been foiled in the United States, or al-Qaeda-linked plots that have been foiled in the United States, one-third of them have been foiled because we got a tip from a member of the Muslim community. And I think that this has played itself out a number of times, including in the quote-unquote Times Square bomber, who had tried to set off a car bomb there. It was reported by a Senegalese Muslim vendor. And so that's one of the reasons why you don't want to ostracize all Muslims. They are, of course, a key ally in this fight, and it's important to make them feel like they are part of the American fabric and part of the American community, because they certainly are. Another reason to not engage in this kind of hateful fear-mongering is that it bolsters our enemies. It strengthens the al-Qaedas of the world. If they're able to say, look, the West is at war with us, come and join our cause, come be a terrorist radical in our ranks. If the Hezbollahs and Hamases can say things like that, all they need to do is see some of the language being espoused by right-wing actors here in America who are trying to engage in these kinds of wars, stealth wars against Islam. And so I think we would all be benefited from kind of ratcheting down the rhetoric and being a little bit more thoughtful and a lot less antagonistic.
Again, I'm speaking with Fass Shakir, who's vice president at the Center for American Progress and serves as editor-in-chief of thinkprogress.org and the Progress Report. Well, I recall, Fass, that when Lou Dobbs was on CNN and spouting all kinds of anti-Latino bigotry, a lot of Latino organizations got together and shamed CNN into firing him. And I'm just wondering why there isn't a coalition of groups in this country, faith-based groups, and the Democratic Party, for that matter, because the Republican Party is apparently a bigotry-free zone when it comes to Muslims. Why isn't this being organized, and why not this pushback?
Well, I think you're starting to see it. I mean, it's in its infancy, but what has happened because of Peter King, Representative Peter King's congressional hearings into Muslim radicalization, and this occurred last year, I think last March, it really starts to move people both within the Muslim community and outside of it to say, oh, we need to start forming coalitions and working together, those of us who have never worked together before. So this is joining of it across a lot of faiths and across a lot of issue areas and saying, hey, we have a common fight here. We're trying to defend our civil rights, civil liberties as a country, and try to push back on people who want to make this a place of hate. And so I think you saw that in the pushback to Peter King's hearings, and I think that you've had a number of victories since then. And one that pops to mind is the fallout over the decision by Lowe's, the hardware giant, to pull its advertising from a Muslim show on TLC called All American Muslim. I think that when Lowe's decided to pull its advertising because it decided to cave to a right-wing group who was upset that the Muslim show, reality show, wasn't showing a terrorist, Lowe's decided, okay, we'll cave to that pressure and pull our advertising. What happened is you saw a national movement of people who both wanted to boycott TLC, but also Lowe's, and also wanted to engage in positive efforts to buy advertising on All American Muslim. And so there was a glimmer of hope there. I think also that you see that the currency of Islamophobia is gaining a little bit less traction than it used to, and I hope that's a sign that we're moving in a positive direction.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Faz Shakir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Faz Shakir, who's a vice president at the Center for American Progress, and he serves as editor-in-chief of thinkprogress.org and the Progress Report. He previously worked as a research associate for the Democratic National Committee as a legislative aide to Senator Bob Graham on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee and as a communications aide in the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. We're going to take a brief station break and be back in a moment, joined by a filmmaker and an extraordinary and inspiring young man who spent 18 years wrongly imprisoned in Arkansas.